Today's the big day. For the first time since 1979, a total solar eclipse is coming to the continental U.S., and right here in Illinois, it's one of the best places to see it. For people of all ages, the excitement is palpable.
It's not a very common event since the moon and the sun had to line up perfectly.
We've been talking about it a lot in class, about like how it's like really rare, and so I'm like really excited to see it.
They tell me that it is really a life-changing experience. The whole idea of you're standing in the moon's shadow, it's almost like a spiritual thing.
We'll take you on an Amtrak Eclipse Express from Champaign to Carbondale, hear from eclipse chasers all across the country, and check in with Southern Illinois as we're a few hours from experiencing this rare astronomical event in totality. Plus, the latest Illinois political news, including all the politics that happens every year at the state fair, is all coming up on the special eclipse hour of the 21st. The latest news is next. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and it's August 21st, 2017. The day some towns in Illinois have been planning for years has finally arrived. The total solar eclipse is just a couple hours away, and like the millions of people who are chasing it all across the country, we're going to be doing that for you on today's program. We'll be going from Mount Hood National Forest in Oregon, where it's already started, to near Shawnee National Forest in southern Illinois. We're going to bring you the latest weather forecast. Fingers crossed that rain and clouds don't ruin this for some of us in the state. But first, let's hear from people in Illinois, young and old, from central to southern Illinois, about how they're feeling leading up to the eclipse.
So are eclipse glasses just like sunglasses?
I know how it happens, but why does it happen?
We've been talking about it a lot in class, about like how it's like really rare, and so I'm like really excited to see it.
You know, we've seen pictures of it previously, but I don't think that kind of does it justice, so it's definitely going to be a sight to see.
I mean, I'm hoping it's a little cooler than just walking outside when it's nighttime.
Well, I feel like time is going to stand still, and I think that's kind of a neat thing.
399 is here, heading for Carbondale to the eclipse. Cover your eyes.
Hey!
And don't get sunburned eyeballs.
From what I've heard, you have to be in the path of totality to get the most out of it. So I did anything I could to come here with my girlfriend because I think this experience is going to be incredibly worthwhile.
Those are voices of people from all across Illinois preparing for today's total solar eclipse. Where are you? You can tweet us where you're at or what you're seeing. Our handle is 21STShow. You can give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. Thanks to 21st producers Christine Herman and Alan Montesilio and WILL's Lisa Brault for that audio. Alan's actually in Carbondale. He was on that Amtrak Eclipse Express from Champaign earlier this morning. We're going to be checking with him later on the hour, hearing about how that train ride went. And again, wherever you are, you can tweet us and let us know how you're watching the eclipse. As we speak, the moon is on its way to perfectly aligning with the sun in a way that will create more than 2 minutes of complete darkness along a 70-mile-wide path that cuts across the U.S. from Oregon to South Carolina. This is a rare astronomical event that people all across the world have been anticipating for such a long time. In fact, we had our very first conversation about the solar eclipse on the 21st almost exactly a year ago with David Leake, director of the William Starkel Planetarium at Parkland College in Champaign. He's tied up with events taking place in southern Illinois all day, but we caught up with him last week to learn more about the science behind this. David, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, have you seen a total solar eclipse before, or will this be your first one as well?
Well, full disclosure, I have not seen one of these. I've seen several partials, and we've also had the 1994 annular or ring eclipse that came right through Champaign-Urbana. Again, that's been a few years ago. So, yes, this will be my first one.
So there are people who are eclipse chasers. They travel around the world to experience total eclipses as they occur in different locations. My mom's going to be mad at me for bringing this up, but she said to me earlier, what's the big deal about this?
That's a great question, because I've got friends that do that too. I have some that have gone to Indonesia and gone to Siberia and Europe to see these things. And I'm like, you know, I've never had the money or the time to do that. But they tell me that it is really a life-changing experience. The whole idea of you're standing in the moon's shadow, it's almost like a spiritual thing. So I'm kind of looking forward to it myself.
And what are you most looking forward to in particular? Is it that, or is there something about this from your perspective as an astronomy and physics professor that you're particularly interested in?
Well, I think as an astronomy professor, it's really just the entire experience. I know I've been told that when the moon does get in front of the sun, that you can see the sun's corona. And this is something that is invisible most of the time and really only visible during a total solar eclipse. They do have some fancy equipment now where they can mimic that. But really, it's during these eclipses that you can see this. So I'm looking forward to that and what's called the diamond ring effect, where just the last bit of sunlight is covered by the moon. And the whole idea of the darkness is very abrupt. I know when the sun sets here, we, of course, have a period of twilight where it just gets dark very gradually. And the darkness here is very abrupt.
Okay, so let me ask you some technical questions.
Okay.
In particular, about experiencing a partial eclipse versus a solar eclipse. One of our producers attended Phil Plait's talk at the Champaign Public Library last month, and he said the difference between a partial and a total eclipse is like the difference between reading about kissing and kissing. Do you think scientifically, do you think that's accurate?
I would say it is. And again, full disclosure, I haven't seen one of these. I won't comment on the kissing part. I had somebody tell me that, well, they're here in Champaign, but I think I'm going to drive to Effingham. Well, going to Effingham, you're really getting about 93% coverage here, maybe 95% there. You're not even going to notice the 2%. So it's almost as if you're going to either watch the partial eclipse or you're going to go to the totality zone. There's really, to go to like a 98% really doesn't make any sense.
And
kind of all or nothing.
Okay. And then for people in Northern Illinois, whether you're in Rockford or Chicago, like what percentage are people going to get in that part of the state?
I believe Chicago is about 88%. 88% of the sun would be covered by the moon.
Okay. And then for people who, so if you're not in the zone of totality, so that would be Pinckneyville, Carbondale, Vienna. Obviously, those people are already on their way down there now. That's not a question as to whether or not you can't make a decision at this point whether or not to go. But what would you recommend? Do you think the best way for people in other parts of Illinois is to go outside? Is it to watch it, for example, like on NASA.gov? Or what do you think is the best way to experience this?
If it were me and I was in the Chicago area and I was not going to travel southward, I think what I would do is to watch at least the first part of the eclipse online. To me, watching things on TV or a computer screen isn't near doing it live, but NASA's going to have sites set up all along that line of totality, so you could actually start watching the eclipse, say, from sites out in Wyoming. And then so you could get to watch totality from out there. But then right here in Illinois, the maximum coverage is right about 20 minutes after 1. So if it were me, I think I would go outside maybe 1 o'clock and watch for an hour or so. Of course, you got to be safe.
With your eclipse glasses,
that's
correct.
Right. Yeah. Right. If you're in the zone of totality, during that 2 minutes and 30-some seconds, you can take your glasses off and look directly at the event. But if you're not in the zone of totality, you always have to have your glasses on, always.
Right. So everyone needs to know they need to have eclipse glasses. That's an important thing. Let me ask you another science question. While you're encouraging everybody, and there are going to be millions of people who are, with their eclipse glasses, we should point out, staring up at the sky to enjoy the sight, there are scientists out there who are going to be collecting a lot of data. So you mentioned the corona. What kind of things are we going to learn about the sun, or what have we learned about the sun from previous solar eclipses?
Well, we've always known that the sun, I say always, since we've been studying the sun, we've always known that the sun has a corona. But the sun changes. The sun is not the same from day to day. It might seem that way to us, but the sun can be very active at times and other times be pretty docile. And so I think they want to observe the eclipse at that particular moment. So again, the more we learn about the sun, the more it helps us learn about our whole solar system with the Earth being a part of it. But it's really mapping the corona and seeing what's going on with the sun at that moment, because, again, it does change.
Right. Now, I wonder, like, when you're looking online, you see videos of crowds gathered to watch previous eclipses, and you hear crowds roar at the moment that complete totality hits. Do you think being part of a massive crowd adds to the experience?
I think so. And to me, it'd be almost like going to a concert where you're the only person on the in the seats. Just the roar of the crowd, to me, you know, going to a baseball game, it just kind of adds to the moment. So yeah, we're going to be going down south, and hopefully we'll have a little bit of a crowd, and I can't predict what's going to happen. There may be screaming and yelling, and who knows?
Right. Well, we will be later on in the hour, hopefully being able to check in live with everybody down in Carbondale. I should point out that the next total solar eclipse that will cut across the U.S. in 2024 will also pass over Carbondale in southern Illinois. How did we get so lucky as to be the only state in the country that will be able to experience a total eclipse twice?
Yeah,
that's such a short time period.
That's kind of something. If you look at the eclipse path, it almost makes a big X with a spot just south of Carbondale being the center of that X. And it's interesting to note that since the founding of the city of Chicago, they've never had a total solar eclipse. So depending on what you believe in, you might think, you know, the good Lord's a Saluki fan or something.
All right. Well, we will leave it at that. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit more of the science behind this as we are experiencing this. It's not a once-in-a-lifetime event, as we've said, for people in southern Illinois, because we'll have a chance again in 2024. Stephen Leake is director of the William M. Starkel Planetarium at Parkland College in Champaign, where he also teaches astronomy and physics. David, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Today's eclipse starts here in Illinois about half an hour from now, but in Oregon, it's already underway. Joining us from Mount Hood National Forest, about 2 hours southeast from Portland, is the Oregonian's outdoors and travel reporter, Jamie Hale. Hey, Jamie, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we're far away in Illinois. We're pretty flat here. You're in Mount Hood. Can you tell us what the sky looks like right now? Can you describe where you're at?
Yeah, well, I'm here at Timothy Lake, which is just south of Mount Hood, and the skies are totally clear here. It's a beautiful day, and the sun is it's just up, and the eclipse has just begun here. So we've got a little bit of the sun is being eaten away by the moon, just about at the northeast corner of the sun. We've got about 2 dozen people here who are gathered to watch it. Everyone's super excited.
Oh, that's nice. 2 dozen, so not that big of a crowd. Can I ask you, are you really in the middle of the forest? Like, can you hear animals? Because I always, you know, you always hear about how animals react to an eclipse. What's it sound like right now?
Well, so far, it's not. So far, it just looks like a normal day. Animals shouldn't start reacting until it gets, you know, a lot darker. But there are a lot of animals here, a lot of birds, a lot of squirrels, lots of other kinds of animals here. So I am anticipating seeing and hearing some kind of strange behavior from them, whatever that may be.
You know, Jamie, I know each part of the country that's been getting ready for all these visitors has some different challenges. One of the ones that you guys are facing, not just in Oregon, but Idaho and Wyoming, is whether all the public lands can handle that many people. I saw you tweeting earlier about concerns about the risk of human-created wildfires. How are things looking right now?
So far, so good. The traffic and crowds weren't nearly as bad as they anticipated here in Oregon, but they've had a lot of people today parking along the shoulders of the highways, either to just get a spot that they know they can get or to get a good, quick escape out of the area once it's done. But a lot of the state officials have said that one of the big risks of human-caused wildfire is people parking over dry grasses, which we have a lot of right now. So that's still a concern right now. People are watching it. You have a lot of wildfires here in the area, so obviously we don't want to add to that, especially when you've got, upwards of a million people packed into this area.
Yeah. Where can you describe for us the parts of Oregon where the eclipse is running through?
Yeah, so it's starting at the coast around Depot Bay, which is the north-central part of the Oregon coast. And then it's kind of cutting a path southeast across Oregon through the state capital in Salem. And then across just south of Mount Hood, where I'm at, and then over through the desert, across Madras and John Day, where the Painted Hills are, and then it's going across out, entering Idaho, just past Ontario, Oregon, which is just in the southeastern part of the state.
So, Jamie, you're the outdoors and travel reporter, as that beat goes, which seems like a pretty cool beat to me, first of all. How cool is covering this eclipse? Where does this rank compared to other reporting assignments you've had?
I mean, this is a once in a lifetime thing for Oregon here. I know it's happening in 2024 other places, but we're not going to get it here in Oregon until 2169 again. So it really feels like it's covering this big, huge event that everyone here is going to remember for a lifetime. I cover a lot of stuff outdoors and I go a lot of places, but this is totally different. The human aspect of this and the community aspect, everyone gathered here together to see this rare cosmic event is a really cool moment. I'm excited to see how people react and how people maybe can come together through this.
Yeah, that's great. Jamie, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. I'm glad your cell phone signal held up. From Mount Hood National Forest, Jamie Hale is the outdoors and travel reporter for The Oregonian. Jamie, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
The big question, of course, is whether or not here clouds are going to ruin our view across Illinois. Joining us now is meteorologist Jeff Frame, who teaches at the University of Illinois. Jeff, you're in Kentucky. Is that because you're worried about clouds ruining your eclipse here in Illinois? We just got about a minute before the break, Jeff, but just want to hope we could get a quick answer there.
Yes, we were a little concerned about southern Illinois yesterday, even to this morning. It's looking better down there now. But we're set up right now down in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. We got one of our grad students, our department head, head of our school, a couple other friends down here with us. We got a cooler full of pop and fruit, and we're ready to go and watch the eclipse.
So it looks clear where you are right now, Jeff, and that's the forecast you've got for your area. Okay. We're going to...
Southern Illinois is looking okay. It looks like I think they'll luck out and hold on to a lot of clearing down there. But as you head north across Illinois into some of the partial areas, I-70 and north right now is looking pretty cloudy, and it looks like it's going to stay that way.
Yeah,
so
real
Champaign,
quick, Jeff,
Urbana,
what about
Peoria,
yeah,
Quad Cities, Chicago, all of that?
Yeah, so all of it's going to be a little iffy, huh? Hold on just a second, Jeff. We'll get a more complete forecast from you after the break. You're listening to The 21st.
Support for the 21st comes from the School of Social Work at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, preparing tomorrow's leaders to be advocates for and agents of social change. More information at socialwork.illinois.edu.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for tuning in on this eclipse day. We're about 20 minutes from the eclipse starting here in Illinois. Totality, of course, a little bit later after that. On Twitter, we've been asking what you've been doing. You can tweet to 21STShow. Barbara says she's going to be in Gorville, Illinois with U of I astronomy folks to experience eclipse set 2017. On Facebook, Kyle says, I'm in a meeting at work. I'm going to try to sneak out for a moment to peek at the eclipse. I think lots of people are going to do that. Also from the University of Illinois on the line with us from Kentucky, Jeff Frame is in the Department of Atmospheric Sciences. Jeff, I just want to make sure we get that forecast clear for everybody. You think, you were saying just before the break, Carbondale, the zone of totality, so Carbondale South, Shawnee National Forest, that area looks like it's in the clear in terms of cloud cover. Can you go up north through the state? Can you start with, said you were doing Springfield, Champaign, Peoria, and up further north?
We'll work our way north. So, yeah, the zone of totality down by Carbondale, it's clear now. Over the last couple of days, looking at some of our forecast models, there was uncertainty down there as to whether or not it would be clear, whether or not it would be cloudy, because as we know, weather forecasting is not an exact science. So that is why we decided to go to Kentucky, because we're used to chasing weather and chasing things, and today we're chasing clear skies, which is a new experience for me. But it looks like right now they're going to, I think, luck out down there in the zone of totality. As we make our way north, there's some higher, thinner clouds kind of in between I-64, so Mount Vernon, Metro East areas, St. Louis, up toward I-70, the Effingham, Centralia areas there. That area, some filtered sun, but I think you'll be able to see through a lot of that high, thin overcast there across the south-central part of the state. But as you head farther north, really from I-70 on north, so this is going to be Bloomington, Springfield, Peoria, Champaign, Urbana, Chicagoland, Rockford, Quad Cities area. I'm just seeing a lot of cloud cover showing up on satellite. If you look out your window I've seen some pictures up there. It looks kind of gray, kind of
grungy.
It's
pretty gray in Chicago, yes. I will tell you, it was gray this morning, which was not optimistic for me. I was thinking when I was looking at the skies.
Right, mm-hmm. And I saw a picture from Champaign. It was gray there, too.
Okay.
And you can't see the sun through those clouds, so unfortunately, I think that's really going to put a damper on the eclipse viewing across a lot of central into northern Illinois. Now, that's not saying a couple folks might not luck out and you get a break forming, you know, right at the right spot, hopefully right about 20 after 1 there during at least maximum coverage of the sun up that far north. But I think, again, for most of central northern Illinois, unfortunately, I think it'll be more cloudy than sunny.
Well, Jeff Frame, thanks for joining us. I know you're normally chasing tornadoes instead of eclipses. I appreciate you giving us the forecast for Illinois. And we look forward. We'll keep tweeting all of your pictures. I know you're great about that. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. Yeah, this is a once or I guess a twice-in-a-lifetime experience with 2024 coming up.
Right. Although I know, thanks for that. Although we know that one's going to be in April, so the weather for that is not as good as what we're expecting for today. Lots of people decided to head down to southern Illinois for the eclipse. Some people, unfortunately, are stuck in traffic. That includes Urbana resident Matt Kitzmiller, who's on his way to the Zone of Totality. Hey, Matt, welcome to the 21st.
Hello.
Hey, Matt, where are you right now? Matt, are you there? Looks like we lost Matt. I know he was in traffic. He's in transit to Marion for the eclipse. We'll try to get him back in just a few minutes and check in with him later on the show. You're listening to the 21st. Try to check in with Matt later on the hour. Governor Rauner and his wife Diana are in Carbondale today watching the eclipse from SIU. Last week he was at the state fair along with lots of other politicians. As we do every Monday, we like to catch you up on the latest in Illinois politics. Joining us now for some non-eclipse news is WBEZ's Tony Arnold along with Reuters' Dave McKinney. Tony, Dave, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
And hey, Nellan, good to be here. Thanks, Nellan.
So let's talk politics. Tony, let me start with you. Last week, Governor Rauner was at the state fair. Lots of other politicians, obviously. There's Democrat Day. There's Republican Day. I want to start, Tony, with the national news that happened last week. Governor Rauner finally weighed in on not just President Trump, but the events in Charlottesville. Tony, that was kind of like a couple day thing. What did he say?
Yeah, that was the answers from Governor Rauner kind of changed throughout the week as the rest of, you know, the country was also putting pressure on the president to address the what happened in Charlottesville. And it started out on Monday when Governor Rauner was asked about just kind of his overall thoughts on Charlottesville, and his answer was, well, I condemn racism and white supremacy. And if you remember at that time, at that point in the week, it was questionable.
Was this terrorism, right? Are you calling this terrorism?
Yeah,
right.
Well, then it turned into, yeah, then the question turned into, do you believe it's terrorism? And he wouldn't say that it was. A few hours later, 2 hours later, after getting a lot of pressure, especially from other Democrats hoping to replace him in the governor's mansion, Rauner put out a statement saying, well, it is, in fact, terrorism. But the bigger thing for me was actually later in the week on Republican Day when Rauner disputed the president outright, and he rarely says Trump's name. He doesn't like talking about the president or federal issues. He tends to try to stick to, financial issues around the state because that's the kind of – that's how he's always been as far as a politician goes. And for him to openly rebuke the president in that way is really one of the first times in a few years.
It is the first time. Davis, yeah. Dave, is that the first time you've ever heard him rebuke President Trump? Because he's been pretty quiet. He doesn't even like to say his name, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's been very guarded against doing that. And, you know, part of the reason for that, I think, Nyla, is that you look at downstate, everything's south of I-80. That was solidly red. and solidly pro-Trump country, and that is part of his, you know, part of the political map he needs in order to, you know, be politically solvent in 2018. And so if he's going to alienate those voters, that's going to increase the need to do well in the suburbs, which went in Hillary, and in the city. So, I mean, he's kind of in a political bind here with Trump, and the Democrats know it. That's why they keep exploiting it.
Well, and then the other controversy last week was about a political cartoon that the Illinois Policy Institute put out and then took down. If for those who haven't seen it, it's a picture of a young African-American boy sitting on the street with a need money for school begging sign. And he's asking from that from kind of like a fat white man with half empty pockets who says, sorry, kid, I'm broke. I cannot say the words on the air that one state Democrat used to describe his reaction on the House floor. Dave, you were there for that. Can you explain a little bit of the conversation around the cartoon that was happening in the state House?
Yeah, I mean, I was certainly monitoring it. And it's, you know, it's unusual when there's a breach of protocol like that on the House floor or the Senate floor when you get one of those words that George Carlin would use back in the day. But Representative Andrade from the North Side was the first to stand and single out this cartoon as racist. And, you know, he went so far as to say that this African-American child was a caricature of Representative Christian Mitchell, which, you know, and that was on the basis that there was a C on the kid's cap. I think that was going a bit far, but...
Oh, I thought that was for Cubs. Interesting. Okay. I thought the C meant Cubs,
but
right.
It created this stir on the floor, and then that was followed by a resolution on Charlottesville. And you know, I think Republicans were really kind of, they had no choice really, but to kind of stand down while Democrats made an issue out of this cartoon. And of course, it fits into the narrative that the Democrats have been raising about all of these Illinois Policy Institute people who have gone to work for Rauner. This is the organization that is their alma mater. And, you know, when the governor stands repeatedly, at least on two occasions, and says that he couldn't react to the cartoon because he hadn't seen it, I mean, that sort of strains, you know, believability. I think anybody who had an interest in politics had seen that cartoon pretty much within an hour of discussion on the floor because it lit up social media. And you would think that there would be an interest on the part of the governor, knowing that many of his current staff came from that organization, to at least be aware of a controversy, especially a racially divisive one that took up time in the House floor, to be aware of what was going on with that. And instead, he said that he hadn't seen the cartoon.
I would just add that Marianne Ahern at NBC Chicago has been really dogging the governor over this exact issue and finally got something a little bit more of a statement from the governor last night saying he doesn't have time to look at these types of cartoons. And I think, you know, look, the Policy Institute, the governor has hired a few of their top people to run his new administration about 6 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago. And since the Policy Institute is known for these types of cartoons, not necessarily ones that get this much attention, but they design these cartoons to be shared on Facebook and shared on social media. There's any number of caricatures of House Speaker Michael Madigan on their website and really making fun of him if there's any indication about which way they're leaning. And so, you know, look, these types of cartoons are kind of in their wheelhouse, but for them to get this much attention over this one and then really the statement about why they took it down wasn't even they did it begrudgingly. They said we don't really think this is racist, but it's become a distraction over the issue of school funding. And so we're going to take it down because it's a distraction, not because we believe it's racist. So if anything, they're still standing by it, even though they did end up taking it down.
Well,
I thought it was a pretty powerful statement, though, that they did choose to take it down, because if they didn't find a problem with it, I mean, they can say what they want to say, but if they didn't find a problem with it, it would still be on their website.
And then let's get to the issue then of school funding, which was supposed to be taken up the past week by the House. The Senate took action last Sunday. There were supposed to be votes scheduled on Wednesday. Tony, can you remind us what happened on Wednesday? Tony, Dave, either of you jump in here and then sort of summarize for us what's going on with school funding right now, because pretty late on payments owed to K through 12 public schools throughout the state at this point.
Well, real quick, the House, you know, they're calling special sessions at this point to come in and they're not usually in session in August, but because there's still no deal to, they've already, the state's now missed two payments to schools that it would normally make. So they're making these special session trips. And on Wednesday, the House did not vote to override. They didn't even call a vote to override Governor Rauner's veto of the school funding bill. Instead, they called a bill that kind of mirrors, you know, the governor's own plan, his ideal way that he would fund schools. And it ended up getting zero votes, zero yes votes. Republicans kind of said, this is a joke. This is a game. We're not going to participate. Otherwise, you know, the Republicans have been saying that they stand by him, but they wouldn't vote on this. So it was an effort by the Democrats, who are in the majority and have control, to call these types of bills to say, look, there's no support for the governor's plan. So go ahead and let's go ahead and override the governor's veto, which the House Speaker said is going to happen. At least the first vote, the first attempt will be on Wednesday in 2 days.
So the big question, Dave, is do we think that, obviously, the vote would have happened last week if Speaker Madigan thought the votes were there, right? Is there a reason why you think is that what's behind the delay, Dave?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we all know Madigan well enough to know that he's very methodical in steps that occur. And I think what the purpose in last Wednesday's kind of production was to show that there wasn't ample support in the House for what, you know, the Democrats portrayed as Rauner's legislation. So he put that on the record and you know, string out Republicans on voting for that. And then, you know, it was interesting that procedurally Madigan said that, you know, they have two bites at the apple, you know, this coming Wednesday, and then they have one more time if it fails then. And I think there is an expectation that it probably will fail on Wednesday, because when this passed the House originally, it had 60 votes. And in order to override a veto in the House, you need 71 votes. And the way the math works, 67 House Democrats exist. Some of those are targeted House Democrats, but under the best circumstances, if you put all 67 on there, you would still need four Republicans to support it. And just a little back-of-the-envelope analysis here that I did a while back, I mean, there are 19 school districts that are on the state financial watch list. These are the ones that are the neediest of the needy. And most of these districts, I mean, Chicago is on it, but most of the other 18 are all downstate. And there are, of those 18 school districts, 11 of them are represented by different House Republicans. So I think there is some hope on the Democratic side that, you know, it may not happen Wednesday, but possibly later in the month. I think August 29th was the out date, that there might be some defections eventually on this, because these districts, some of them downstate, are hurting really badly here.
Right. And
they've used up borrowing authority and everything.
To that point, I mean, it's Speaker Madigan and the House aren't just stringing Republicans along. They're stringing along every school district across the state. Tony, where are we at with in terms of when this, how soon this needs to happen?
Well, I think some of the school, as far as we know, no school in the state of Illinois has said we cannot open for the first day because we haven't been paid yet by the state. That said, some estimates, some schools have said, yeah, we can have kind of projected out. We can make it to Halloween before we got to close up shop and send students home. Other schools might be a little bit sooner than that, especially those districts that are very, you know, around poor areas, property poor areas, where they may not have enough money in the bank, in their reserves, or might not have access to a line of credit to borrow to keep the doors open like other school districts would be able to do. If you recall, you know, social services around the state of Illinois during the two-year impasse, state budget impasse, every social service was a little different depending on how much money they had in the bank,
what kind of
line of credit they had access to, how many people they could lay off.
So same thing for the school districts too. Right, as well, Tony. All right, well, we'll wait for action for this. We'll see what happens on Wednesday. I want to thank WBEZ's Tony Arnold, Reuters Chicago, Dave McKinney for joining us on this Eclipse Day. Both of you guys have your glasses ready?
I do.
I'm not looking at the sun.
All right, good. Thanks so much for being with me, guys.
Thanks, Nellie.
The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
I'm Nyla Boodoo, and you're listening to The 21st on The 21st, which is the day of the total solar eclipse. We've been hearing about what's been going on out west, where the moon has already begun to pass in front of the southern Illinois, pass in front of the sun. In southern Illinois, the process is going to begin in, about 10 minutes or so. The long-awaited totality will be at 1:21 this afternoon. In central Illinois, which is going to be experiencing a partial solar eclipse today, students who began classes last week have also been getting ready. On Friday, our 21st producer, Christine Herman, visited Kate Higgs' 8th grade science class at Franklin Middle School in Champaign and brought us back this postcard of how the kids are getting ready.
We are really, really lucky because you're the class that I get to take out for the solar eclipse. We will have these, so stylish glasses that you will be wearing the entire time you're looking at the sun.
So are eclipse glasses just like sunglasses?
They're really, really similar. Come on up. So put these on and tell us what you see.
I can barely see anything.
Okay. And then look towards the class and look up at the bright light.
Oh, I can see the bright light.
Oh, I can see the bright light. What do you think the bright light represents?
The sun.
Because the moon goes in an oval shape around the Earth. So when the sun is directly behind the moon, it casts a shadow over the Earth, which is the solar eclipse.
And the sun's corona shines through it, so we have to get glasses so we don't fry our eyeballs.
I know how it happens, but why does it happen?
That is an outstanding question. The really cool thing is where we are on Earth, it just happens that the moon going in front of the sun, they're the same size from where we are. They look the same in our sky.
It's not a very common event since the moon and the sun had to line up perfectly.
We've been talking about it a lot in class, about like how it's like really rare, and so I'm like really excited to see it.
Lots of people excited, and it's a great learning opportunity for science teachers and educators throughout the country. Thanks to the 8th graders at Franklin Middle School in Champaign and Kate Higgs' science class. Let's hope the weather cooperates for them in an hour or two, although not looking so great, I have to say. Let's hope the clouds maybe clear a little bit in the Champaign-Urbana area so everyone can see that, as well as further north. Let's go to Chuck Blyer in Golconda. He's the superintendent of Pope County Community School District 1. He is actually near Shawnee National Forest, about 60 miles southeast of Carbondale in southern Illinois. Superintendent Blyer, welcome back to the 21st.
Hi, Nyla.
So to start off with, we thought we'd check in with you today to hear what schools were doing with kids, since you're right on the zone of totality. But you guys actually made the decision to close schools today, given what you're seeing in the area. Are you glad that you all made that decision?
Yes, absolutely. The roads are choked. All the campsites in the National Forest are completely booked. They actually opened up more slots, and they filled all of those. The town that I live in, Golconda, which is right on the Ohio River, is at least, I would say, five times as many people here as normal. So it's just, there's cars coming in. There's people with unbelievable telescopes, and some real serious watchers are here today. And we have the sun. It's absolutely perfect right now, so nothing's happening with the sun yet, but it looks like we're going to have a great experience.
Yeah, that's great. So it's totally clear for you, which is good. What have the past couple of days been like in Golconda? As you said, have there just been kind of, have you ever seen this many people in your area before?
I've not seen this many people in this short period of time.
Sure.
They started coming in actually last week, and they just continuously streamed in. The reason to close school was that I just didn't think our buses could make it through, to be honest with you.
Right.
That's the that was my sole decision. To be honest with you, I don't know how many kids or even teachers would have wanted to come. So
sure.
I just said, let's make it a three-day weekend and enjoy it.
Yeah, and how are you enjoying it? What's it been like in your neighborhood this morning?
It's wonderful. I'm looking out at the Ohio River right now, and there's boats everywhere. It's hot, but it's going to be extremely fun. My kids are excited. We're all excited, so it's going to be a fun day.
Yeah, and what are you most looking forward to? I mean, it's kind of, I guess, an unusual experience to prepare for. Like, what have you told your kids?
Well, of course, we have the luxury of having YouTube and videos now, and, of course, the Weather Channel, and that we're getting a lot of information on how to view it. So we're prepared. We've actually, a little tip that I picked up on was putting sunglasses on top of your solar glasses, and it gives you even more clear picture. I just looked into that, but we're able to view it quite clearly, and we're about as excited as can be. You can just really feel the energy in the air.
That's great, and it sounds like it's a great experience for all of you all to be there right in the middle of it, a very rare one that you all are going to have the opportunity to experience. So I appreciate you taking the time this morning to speak with us. That's Chuck Blyer. We normally talk to him about his community school district. Great to have a conversation with you this morning just about the eclipse, and I'm glad to see that there's lots of folks in town to enjoy it. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Nyla.
I've only seen eclipses on, like, movies or TV shows, and it's something I've always wanted to check out.
We kind of late in the game decided to book a hotel, find our way down here.
This is kind of a once-in-a-lifetime event, and that's what I'm most looking forward to.
I have made sure that I stocked up on groceries, full tank of gas, extra water around.
But I think it'll be very interesting, particularly in totality, is to see what things look like and how people and animals respond.
We got some beers, we got some eclipse glasses, and we're just gonna, you know, enjoy it, try and make the most of it.
Those are the voices of eclipse chasers who made their way to southern Illinois, the Murfreesboro, Carbondale area. Thanks to 21st Show producer Alan Montesilio, Illinois Public Radio's Lisa Brault for that audio. And let's go to both of them now. Alan's on the line with us from Carbondale. Lisa's in Murfreesboro. Alan, Lisa, hey, guys. Welcome to the 21st.
Hey, good morning. Happy Eclipse Day.
Yeah, both of you all are having you guys have the fun job of being out a little further south. Lisa, first of all, tell us where you are.
So I am in Murfreesboro, Illinois, which is about, I think it's 8 miles west of Carbondale, and I'm at a farm called Malheur Orchard. It's a peach orchard, and we're getting set up to watch.
Right, and we actually checked in with them on Friday's show to learn how they were getting ready. We also, Alan, you are at a place we checked in with on Friday as well. Are you at Quattro's Deep Pan Pizza in downtown Carbondale?
That's right. I am in Quattro's Deep Pan Pizza in downtown Carbondale. Just to make sure we get a good line here. I came down to downtown Carbondale with my family. I was one of the lucky few people who was able to get Amtrak put out an Eclipse Express train that left Chicago at 3 a.m., and then I hopped on with my family at 5 a.m. in Champaign, and we arrived here about 8:30 or so. And so there's lots of pizza action happening around me right now.
Well, I would imagine for people who got up at 3 a.m. and 5 a.m., 11 a.m. is a perfect time for some pizza. But what was it like on the train, Alan, coming down? Was everybody just kind of a little tired and grumpy, or were people excited?
It was a combination, right? I mean, people were really excited. You know, I talked to one guy who saw a total eclipse in the 1960s, and he was telling me all about what to expect. I talked to U of I students who had never, didn't have much of an interest in astronomy until now. It was obviously, 5 a.m. People were a little bit sleepy. I think everyone got some good sleep in on the train. I mean, Amtrak, too, made it very clear when we got on. It's like, we're not going to make any announcements. We're going to dim the lights. We know that everyone is dead tired right now.
And you got in on time, which is great for Amtrak.
Yeah.
You're going to take the train back. I imagine every seat on the train, was every seat full, completely
every
sold
seat
out?
Was full. There was only one train car for the people from Champaign. They loaded us all up in one train car and got us out of there really quickly. And we got in at about 8:20, which was actually 10 minutes earlier than was expected. And, even Nyla, I was talking to people who, I had a friend who drove down from Champaign to Carbondale, and she got down here in 4 hours, which is really, when you think about all the possible apocalyptic traffic jams we were expecting, it actually does not sound like it's too crowded down here.
Right. I know there are some folks who are still stuck in traffic jams, unfortunately. People that we had talked to who did not leave at 5 in the morning. Alan, what's it like in the pizza shop right now? Is it pretty crowded? How crowded is it in downtown Carbondale?
You know, actually, it's what I would describe as a fairly busy business day, but I wouldn't call it exceptionally crowded right now. When I was down in downtown Carbondale about 8:30, 9 a.m., all the tents were set up. There were people getting the food ready. All of the if a food item could be Eclipse themed or space themed, it was Eclipse themed or space themed. I'm posting up with my family around at SIU. I probably could see about 20 or 30 people within earshot. In my line of sight. People are kind of scattered all over campus. I would imagine a lot of people are being shuttled from the Amtrak station, from downtown Carbondale to Saluki Stadium, which is where the NASA headquarters is. And there's about 16,000 people there. So it's actually been fairly tame, at least in my experience from this morning.
Yeah, Lisa, what's it like in Murfreesboro? You're at Mueller Orchard, but what was it like in the town? How crowded was it? I know you got in over the weekend, right?
Yep, we were there last night. We got in yesterday afternoon, probably right around 3 o'clock, and went to 17th Street Barbecue, and they were pretty slammed when we got there, which was interesting because it was neither lunch nor dinner. But it was still pretty quiet, I would say. And then we headed out to the farm, which, of course, until about 2 hours ago, there was hardly anybody here. We did have one set of campers that were staying on the grounds. But other than that, it was just us and the Mallures. But now I would say there's about 35, 40 cars parked here, maybe around 75 people or so, getting food and setting up in a big open field just south of the barn to watch the eclipse.
And Lisa, important question, what do the clouds look like? Does it look pretty clear where you are?
Where I'm at right now, we've got some high, thin clouds, but it looks like they're going to hold off for the most part. It is really hot. I heard you talking to a guest earlier talking about the heat. It was 90 degrees in the shade, and it feels like 100% humidity and 85-degree dew point. Feels like. I'm not saying that's what it is. I don't know what it is. But so it's very warm, so I think people have been coming into the shade and into the little cafe that's here on the farm to cool off before they go stake their claim on watching. I think pretty soon it's going to be getting underway, if not already. So
I know that while you all are watching, we're talking about different eclipse-themed food. I'm sure there's lots of eclipse-themed pizza. Lisa, did you taste the peach eclipse? Lisa Mueller told us about it on the show on Friday.
Yes. I have not yet had my peach eclipse, which by the way, comes in a really special dessert glass, too, like a commemorative glass, so it's really cool. It looks delicious. I'm going to make sure that I have one, but I see the kitchen has been preparing a lot of those so far this morning.
Alan, as we've been talking to Lisa and you and all the folks who maybe left at 5 in the morning, what are they telling people on how to handle the exit from town after the eclipse? And what's the plan for the return trip on your Amtrak train?
Well, as far as the Amtrak return trip goes, I mean, we're supposed to be back at about, I believe, 5 p.m. or so. They do a pretty good job of, I haven't been informed of specific plans necessarily, but they've done a pretty good job of making sure that there are lots and lots of people, with kind of light, who are clearly with the city of Carbondale, with Carbondale Tourism or police officers. On the walk here, I probably ran into about 6 or 7 people alone who were handing out flyers, who were happy to answer any questions. I think after this, I'm not entirely sure what we're going to do after totality. We might just get something to eat. But yeah.
Last question for both of you guys. Alan, what's the energy like for you? We just heard Chuck Blyer saying how people are really excited. We've talked about seeing this in a crowd. Alan, what's it like in Carbondale?
I think it's definitely a lot of excitement. I think that there's it's definitely very, very hot, as Lisa was saying. The sun is reminding us that even though it'll be gone for 2 minutes, it's not going away anytime soon, so I'm very, very sweaty right now. But there are a lot of families here, a lot of people who are clearly coming in from out of town. I saw one guy with a lot of people with, like, custom-made T-shirts that look not dissimilar from if you were attending, like, a concert tour. I saw one guy with the time of totality in, like, 7 different towns in the Midwest. I saw one guy with a shirt that said, "I came, I saw, I mooned."
As we said, yeah, with the eclipse as well. Oh, it looks like we lost Alan there, but I was saying lots of commercial-themed. I'm glad that lots of these towns seem like they've really gotten on to the eclipse theme. So I want to thank our producer, Alan Montecilio, as well as Lisa Braltz from WILL for giving us sort of a view of what's on the ground there for the eclipse. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. Yet all the night's magic seem to whisper and hush. Yet all the songs.
That does it for us today. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app if you search for the 21st. I want to thank Alan Montecilio, Christine Herman, Bob Hawley for all of the work they put in today's show. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Morick. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I hope everyone has your glasses ready for the eclipse. Thanks for tuning in today.
Yet I know now the time is just right, and straight into my arms you will run.